Glad to be with you this morning and continue our study on healing a wounded spirit. We're really talking about how to order our thoughts and how to do them in such a way where we allow God to be in our lives, that we react as a Christian. And this is the greatest test of all tests. This is the thing we never quite pull together, that we're always growing in. I'm praying, if for nothing else in these studies, that we would recognize our strengths, our weaknesses, and be humbled and understand that we are constantly, we're either going closer to God or away from God. And I know of no better test for our thoughts than we are dealing with emotional times. And oftentimes it's people, that's almost the most emotional conflicts that we have. And we've been talking about in lesson three about do not flee from what is true. And it's very easy for us to create our own reality, to lower our head, to push everybody away. It's very easy to do that. And we don't want to go there. We've already talked about as review that the person who surrounds themselves by yes men and they don't want ever to be contradicted or challenged, that they first off can't see. That's just not a good place to be. We need to see. Secondly, you'll find that oftentimes people will create a reality that causes them to flee things that aren't there. Doesn't fear do that? It did that for me. It's fascinating, the occasions. I remember some sleepless nights that I had because a thought got planted and I really thought certain things were happening and they weren't true. When you get caught in this isolated world, you think you can read minds. You think you just make yourself miserable. Again, last week we talked about that if you let fear drive your life, it will eventually give you the very thing you fear. If fear drives you, you oftentimes, let's say, you know, the girl that's the boy that's dating a girl and he's fearful the girl's going to leave her, and he's so fearful he says, "I think you're going to leave me." Or, "Who you been talking to? Oh, I think you're going to leave me." And she tries to assure him, but he keeps saying that. And you know what she's going to eventually go to do? She's going to leave him. Fear does that. Even with the Jews. The Jews thought, "Well, we'll crucify Jesus. We'll murder a man because we don't want the Romans to come in and take our nation." Guess what happened? Romans came in and took their nation. Fear is illogical. It causes us to pull back from good things. The one talent man was afraid. What was the one talent man afraid of?
Losing
what he had and having the wrath of the master. "Oh, you are a hard man, so I was afraid." So what did he get? He got what he feared. And so we do not want to go down the path of fear. It makes us irrational. It tortures us. I love the classic quote, "No passion so effectively robs the mind of all of its power of acting and reasoning as fear." And 1 John 4:18, "There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear, because fear involves torment." Indeed it does. "But he who fears has not been made perfect in love. We loved him because he first loved us." Now, we're talking about here our relationship to God. We can have a godly fear or reverence, but we don't have to have this fear that, "Oh, what's God going to do? What's God going to do?" We can, through knowledge, through a tender heart, through being teachable, through being molded, through understanding the promises of forgiveness, through a pursuit of God, we can have a relationship with God that's filled with love. And that's the path we should have with others as well. Did we cover Genesis 32 last week? I'm trying to remember. Did we read that? Okay, excellent. Okay. Let's talk about seeing our own shortcomings. Why is that hard? Just throw that out. Why is it hard for me to see my own shortcomings? Or maybe my shortcoming is to be recognized by others. There's two different categories here. Why is that hard?
Our feelings.
Huh?
It can hurt our feelings.
It can hurt our feelings.
We start to see things.
Okay.
Pride.
Yeah. Pride is always viewing others. Pride is always, you know, here I can't, you know, I'll lose
some position with others. What else? Why is it sometimes fearful for us to see ourselves?
Change is hard.
Change is hard. Many times we're concerned about what others think too, don't we? What others will think.
There's irrational things. Have you heard about the person?
I mean, you probably see this in real life. Doctors, I'm sure, see this all the time. You know, I have some cancer signs I'm seeing in my body. Therefore, I'm not going to go to the doctor. Makes sense, doesn't it? I'm afraid of what they may find. Well, don't you need to know this? I mean, the fear will end up causing you to do some of the strangest things. Fear will cause you to pull back from the people you need to talk to. Bring people in your life. It's not going to help you.
It's interesting how that works. You know what God will do? And I really mean this, and I say this trembling. But you know, one of the greatest opportunities for your faith is for you to face your worst fears with God's help. I have a lot of fears I hope I never face. I hope I don't live to the death of a child. I hope that, and I've got other lists I could make. But you know what you see commonly in the book of Genesis? Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. God forced these men of faith to face some great fears. What did Jacob fear? Remember when he was to go back to the promised land? He really behaved quite well with his brother Esau, right? Oh, he had tricked them, fooled them, and Esau was in tears, and now guess what he's got to go see? He kind of, you know, isn't it easy? I'm going to get away from my fear because I'm going to run. I'm going to run from those that I'm afraid of. Well, guess what God may do in your life? He may make you face your fears. And the longer you let those fears percolate, the bigger they get, don't they? Now here's a beautiful passage here. He's about to go see Esau in Genesis 32:6. Then the messengers returned to Jacob saying, "We come to your brother Esau, and he is coming to meet you. And 400 men are with him." Okay, fear. Okay, fear, report to me. Esau and 400 men. What does that mean?
What does fear say? You're a dead man. It's over. You need to run. Well, no, God told me to go back. I'm trying to obey God, you know. Oh, no.
Now, what could faith say to Jacob?
Am I going to die? No, God's with me. God's told me to come back. I've got God's promises.
Ah, there's a great battleground for faith and fear. So notice, so Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that were with him and the flocks and herds and camels and the two companies, and he said, if Esau comes to the one company, attacks it, the other company which is left will escape. So he takes precautions. Is that unwise? No, that's wise. He's doing what he can do. Verse 9, then Jacob said, and here's beautiful. This is what we all do with our fears. Then Jacob said, "O God, my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, the Lord who said to me," notice, he's quoting God to God, "you told me to do this, the Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your family, and I will deal with you. I am not," now listen to the humility here, "I am not worthy the least of all the mercies and all the truth which you have shown to your servant. For I crossed over this Jordan with my staff, and now I've become two companies. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and attack me, and the mother with the children. For you said, I will surely treat you well and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude." So he lodged there that same night, and took what came to his hand as a present to Esau's brother. This is a beautiful verse. Here's an arrogant man that's being humbled. You know why God allows us to face our fears? Because sometimes we need to be humbled. We need to grow. And here he said, he's quoting God. He took what precautions he could, and he's willing to go forward and face his fear.
What could have Jacob had done here? What's the other possibilities that Jacob could have done? Your brother Esau's coming. What could he have done?
Turned around.
He couldn't. He could have done Jonah. Yeah. But he didn't. He knew enough to know what God sent for him to do, where he needed to be, where he needed to stand, and I'm going to stand, I'm going to face my fears. And God, I'm quoting you, you promised me, you'll be with me, you will not regret doing this. You heard me use the illustration Sunday night about the IRS, you know, getting my first audit, you know, it was tempting to go run. But no, go face. You got to face things. You know, we are held back too often by our fears. Comments on fear.
Okay. It's interesting that you brought up the parable of the, I guess it's the parable, the story of the talents.
Yes.
And the master who gave out his talents. The fear that the one talented man had could be seen as legitimate because he only had one talent. If he would have lost it, then he had nothing to regain any momentum. The two talented or the five talented man still had four talents if he had lost it, if they would have lost one. And they could have regained that wealth, or they could have built upon it, even if they'd have lost one and they could have recovered. But the one talented man, he could hardly recover from that. And so today you hear about doomsday preppers, and they're not using the banks, they're not using the stock market because for fear of it's going to fall. And some may say
I've been storing Hershey bars.
Some may say that's legitimate fear, but just consider that person, that man who was condemned for not even using the bank and using its financial gift that is given when the bank and its interest rates are used. It's just interesting that the Bible points out there's faith in investing. And in that scenario, that's exactly what it is.
I also see a lack of understanding of the master. Again, I may be reading things. We both may be reading things in this parable that was not meant to be read, but I still, we do that anyways. We do no harm in that. But yeah, the other is the master. Oh man, you're a mean guy. He didn't really know what the master expected, what maybe the fear caused him to be distant. I don't know. But, you know, you do see a lack of understanding and knowledge in there.
Yeah, my point was not necessarily on that story, but that sometimes we can give fear legs to the point of where we and others believe it's actually legitimate, and it's not.
Let's just summarize in your own words, class. Let's make some tests. How will I know if fear is unduly ruling my life? What are some questions I can ask myself? This kind of a warning, okay, if I'm seeing this, you know, what are some tests, self-test? Because I have to ask myself that. It's really good to know, self-test, okay?
You know, it's one thing for me to think I'm trusting God, but my wife has shown me through the years, it's another thing for your actions to show that. So I have to look at my actions. Even though I may fool myself into thinking I'm walking trusting God, is my fear controlling my actions? Am I rational in my actions? Do my actions show that I trust God? Or do they show that I'm walking in fear? Which, if I trust God, is not rational.
It's excellent. You want to test whether or not you're rational, okay? Oh, yeah, I'm rational. Okay, let's go to pursue that. Rational. How do I know if I'm rational? How do I know if I'm rational in action? Give me some more things that I need. How will I know if I'm rational? Of course, you're saying if I'm not rational, how can I know if I'm rational? Well, let's talk about that. There's a way to do it. How do I know if I'm rational?
You're staying stagnant. If you're staying stagnant year after year doing the same things over and over again, then you're probably.
Sometimes fear just in this little hole, does it? And oftentimes it drives you deeper. You can go deeper. It's good. What else?
I think the ability to avoid certain people or topics, I think, is one thing that fear and rational aspect of that. My brother's thinking this about me, so therefore I'm going to not talk to them or not talk about a certain topic.
relationships are a great barometer. Again, I'm just speaking generally. There may be times you need to pull back from others. The Bible tells you that. There are times. But if I start seeing radical changes in relationships, that's a warning sign. I need to think this through. But what else? The kind of relationships as well. If you want to be sure you're rational, what would be a good idea as far as relationships go? Have somebody that may tell you that you would trust, that would tell you, that would be the kind of person, you know, they'll tell you things you need to hear, even though you might not want to hear. Are you pushing those people out of your life? Watch for that, you know? The other thing is, just look at your thought processes. What am I concentrating on? Am I constantly going to my fear? Is it always in my life? Does it always come up? You know, am I kind of becoming enslaved to the what if? Think about it. We probably can do a better job of making a list, but that's the kind of things I try to do for me. Okay, here's something I don't need to do, but you know, I can be in it and not know I'm in it. Seriously, that's the way our emotions, we can be caught in a big river. And I would say, the more strong the emotion, the more likely we get caught into things like this.
Larry, another thing is the way we see heaven, the way we see the spiritual realm, it seems that fear a lot of times is driven out of seeing this as real and heaven as imaginary.
Yeah.
And if we understand the promises of God and we look at chapters like Hebrews 11, what caused those people to do the things that they did, it was because this is not real. This is just passing. And the reality is truly the spiritual realm. And what God has promised, He will deliver. And if we focus too much on the factors on this earth, then fear could drive us to the wrong decisions because of the spiritual realm that we should be living in.
Let me give you a great verse on this. 2 Corinthians 4:16. Therefore, we do not lose heart. Why? Even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inner man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we do not look at the things which are seen, our fears, but the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. And that helps us. And you know what I do sometimes when the things say, I don't want to face this. This is not good, but I'm going to say, Lord, I know you can take this event and make me better. Don't run from your fears. And by the way, in raising teenagers and raising our children, we can also make the same mistake. There is a realm of judgment, of wisdom, of what we hold them back from. But there's also a lack of wisdom when sometimes we don't let them face certain things. Again, that's the subject that we get into the details would take us a whole other class or two. But I've sometimes seen Christians overly protect their children. Let's say this, and this is a common example. Well, you know, there's some school trip and there's services. And well, you know, if I pull my child out of the trip and they go to services and come back, that's going to embarrass them. I've seen that. I mean, and then there's others. There's various levels. Some of them not be part of something altogether. But, you know, we need to understand that the building of faith of our children also involves facing difficult things. Again, I'm not saying put them in simple things, to let them make their own choice. I'm not saying that. But I am saying there's a wisdom here, and that's the thing we pray about. You know, what's my best, you know, what's the best thing I can do with my children? Because you can shield them from steps that would actually build their faith. And that's why we need help. We need help every day. We need to be praying every day if you're a parent. So anyway, that's just a thing to think about. Okay, let's now talk about another area where we want to close our eyes, and I call it the blame game. The blame game goes like this. You know, you've heard the child do it. Well, I did it, but it's Johnny's fault. You know, the blame game is, there's nothing wrong in finding out why something happened. There's nothing wrong with finding, looking, and understanding it. But the blame game, as I'm describing it, is an attempt to look away from your responsibility
and push it off on others. And that's a form of blindness. And the blind game, you know, you can have things that are real or imagined. Anger is oftentimes a big part of this. Oftentimes, and again, I say this in marriage, and I say this in dealing with people. Now, I'm very tempted. Somebody starts telling me, Larry, you've done this, and you should do this, and you should do this. And you say, it was my wife doing that. And she's very kind and considerate. Not like I just gave it, but you know, there, you know what a temptation is? What's a temptation when somebody starts telling you things you've done wrong? What's temptation, Glass?
Tell them what they did wrong.
That's right. And we got a good list, too, God. And it's very easy to, but see, the thing that I try to learn, and this is something I've had to learn, not always perfect with it, but I've said, I'm a Christian. Particularly if it's a loved one talking to me. While there may be some things I disagree with, and there may be some things they're doing, but you know, the first thing that I want to be is a person that's willing to listen. I may want to talk to them about their things, but I separate that. I first go ahead, maybe I'm still speaking to you emotionally, I'll take the beating, you know. I might think it's unfair, but I'll take it, I'll listen, and then I'll try to talk about that, and then have the strength in another context to deal with that, and then talk about the other, if again, I'm doing this with love and wisdom. That's hard to do. I know some people that are good at that. You start talking to them, they'll interrupt you, and boom, what's your attitude? Boom, what's this? Boom, and they'll shut you down. And they're angry. You know, you like to talk to angry people? You know, like, you throw that anger out there, swing that sword a few times, and you go, okay, I'm out of here. And, you know, that's maybe what that person wants. You can shut people down very easily. But you see, again, do I want to see? It's hard. It's hard when, and oftentimes when people are trying to talk to us, they'll get something wrong, won't they? And so, see, the bottom line is, I first want to see, I first want to be the kind of person where I want to see. And by the way, when you do that with others, as always, sometimes people are so charged up emotionally, anything you do is not going to help them, but sometimes what it'll do, it'll lower tensions. You know, if you show some humility, I think it will help you and help us, help all of us better communicate with others. Let me show you some interesting passages. There are some people, really, I don't go to. I tell you, I don't. Now, not the Christians. Not the Christians who love congregation and I'm an elder. I'll go to anybody, okay? I understand that. But I'm speaking in general in the world. The Bible tells me there are some people you don't go to. Proverbs 26:4, do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. Now, that's interesting as you break this down. But let me look at the other version. We'll just put these together. Matthew 7:6, do not give what is holy to the dogs, nor cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn and tear you in pieces. Now, there's a place where there are people who are not doing right, not serving God, and they don't listen. They are not interested in right, and I know that. Biblically, a fool is a very strong word. I avoid them. I don't go and correct just anyone. But I would say for this class, for us, we need to be the kind of people that are approachable and teachable. And so, why is it good to be teachable? Why is it good to hear criticism of yourself or correction? Why is that good?
You grow.
You see, because I'll tell you, sometimes, let me think this way. If I'm doing something wrong that may hurt others, I'm doing things that's hurting me. If I got a family, it's going to hurt my children. I'll tell you one thing, your children are going to learn from you how to communicate. You talking about homes and families and marriages and things like that. There's a communication pattern that comes out of homes.
Or lack thereof.
I can curse my children through generations. Notice again some distinctions made in Proverbs 9 and verse 8. Do not correct a scoffer lest he hate you. Rebuke a wise man and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will still be wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. Now, what's the difference between the scoffer and the wise and just man? Verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Our relationship with God gives us that strength. You know what I see sometimes when brethren get upset and maybe going down a path that they're not going to be changed? You know what they oftentimes do? They change relationship, they change churches, and they end up going down paths you never dreamed they'd go down. This can happen to any of us. Losing control of our hearts, getting into this running mode, will hurt greatly. Let's talk about homes. And what if you are in a home where you can't talk one another? Let's say you can't talk to one of the father or the wife or the mother or the father or both. What does a child do when they learn they can't communicate? What do? They don't communicate. What do when they're angry? They bury it, or it comes out in other ways. But what if they do? You know, you can go through this, and what you're going to find, it's typical. It's very, very typical when you study depression, you study addictions, you study characteristics of issues in homes, you almost always see that pattern. I can't talk. I can't communicate. I can't. And certainly when it comes to the parent-child relationship, that is very important. See, there's families, and it's not uncommon, unfortunately, where honest communication is punished. And, you know, I'll say that to my own life. How am I doing? I realize there's some judgment and wisdom here. We do want to give punishment for things that need to be punished. But at the same time, we want it where our children can talk to us. You see, our faith in God can allow us to overcome the temptation to blame others. And so, how do you handle criticism? Are you willing to first listen and then to seek to know your own wrong? We talked about this, but I like James 1:19. So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to anger, quick to speak, and fast to wrath. Right? Now, I kind of got that wrong, didn't I? Let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. These patterns right here are the patterns. If we'll learn it, it'll bless us. It'll bless our relationships. And most of all, it will bless our children. That's something I didn't know when I first became a Christian. I didn't recognize and understand the patterns in the home and how they affect a lot of areas. There's one case, a man that had become a homosexual. And when we later converted him, I knew his family. And there were family issues. There were family issues that directed this man to be tempted to choose this path. He made the choice. But I'm telling you, things like this, they impact a lot more than we realize. And so, as we've talked about 2 Corinthians 13:5, examine yourselves as whether you're in the faith. Test yourselves. Do you not know yourselves that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you are disqualified? So I'm going to come back to 1 John 2, and I actually made. Let's talk about the blame game. Let's say we blame others. Give me some areas where people blame others and what they do. What typical blame? I mean, I just gave a situation that could. Oh, I'm a homosexual because of my dad. I didn't say that, did I? I didn't say that. I said that he created a temptation. But still, that man's made his choice. We talk about alcoholism. We talk about other areas. But give me, you know, how many, anybody want to volunteer any? I know with our kids, you know, somebody got me mad, you know.
That's what I was thinking is sometimes we're angry and we blame the anger on someone else and could be that we're provoked and we can recognize that, but what we do with our feelings and how we handle them is not someone else's fault. Yeah.
When we do this, particularly, we're rarely righteous, by the way. We rarely got it right. It's one of the most injurious games we can play. I did it, but you're to blame. It's a cop-out. Well, we tend to become unjust and unmerciful judges, don't we? I'm the judge, jury, and executioner. The Rouse Court is in session. Matter of fact, you've already been judged. I don't even want to hear from you. And here is the sentence. Goodbye. Ever had that happen to you? Judge, jury, and executioner? The Bible says in James 2:13, for judgment is without mercy to the one who's shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. You'll hear about this verse a few more times in our study. And so we've got to be very careful. I love another writer talking about, you know, the blame game. It never makes relationships whole. It only breaks relationships. It never unifies. It only divides. It never builds. It only destroys. It never solves our problems. It only complicates our problems. You know, being in a position of leadership is a challenging position because you will make mistakes. You'll do things that you wish you could have done differently. In your own life, we go through things we wish we could do over. But you know what you can do? I don't want to live in the land of throwaway people. I don't want people to throw me away because of a weakness or a failure. I don't want to do that with others. What I want to do is be around brethren in Christ that are willing to reason and talk, and we were able to do what's right and move ahead. When you get into the blame game, you're starting to walk down that path of throwaway people. You give up on them. You throw them away. Overnight, they were good people. Now they're bad people because I'm angry. I'm hurt. Maybe legitimately they've done something wrong. Are you following me? This is a challenge. I'll tell you, it's funny. I laugh at myself sometimes. Sometimes I watch sports, and there's a referee that made this worst call. And I can imagine bad things happening to him and his family and other people. I'm sorry, I've admit my temptation. I start imagining all this stuff, and I take a step back. Really, Larry? Do you do that sometimes? You kind of imagine, you know, you're people that hurt you and all the torture you'd like them to see. I'm going, wow, I'm glad God doesn't think of me that way. It's an unmerciful attitude. And I'm hoping, understanding the grace of God, the forgiveness of God, I'm hoping we as a people will not be so quick to give up on others. That's why it was one reason why you oftentimes don't see churches develop is because oftentimes you can't develop a leadership. You cannot develop a healthy atmosphere. You cannot develop good homes and good children when we live in the blame game. There's three areas we need to stop blaming. First off, we don't need to blame God. Do people blame God? Yeah, they do. One father I heard once, he said, where was God when my son died? Tragic death of a young son. And somebody who he trusted sat with him for a while, listened to him a while, and gave him this answer. He was the same place he was when his son died. Trying to get him to understand this life's not all there is. In James 1:13 it says, let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. What should you do when you're tempted to blame others? And I'm talking about avoiding, you just want to see their faults and you don't want to listen. What should you do?
You got to turn it around on yourself. In my life, when I want to start blaming, if things are going awry with my marriage, my kids, clients at work, it's typically me. And that's hard in the moment to see that. And now James talks about looking at it. If anyone's a hearer of the word and not a doer, is like the man who looks in his face in the mirror, for once his look at himself has gone away and believed forgot what kind of person he was. And that's hard to look in the mirror. But usually that's what you need to do.
We've got to get that mirror. I mean, we've got to grab the mirror and say, I'm willing to look at the mirror. Yvette and I, when we were dating and early in our marriage, she says, you know, if I'm not happy in my life, if I find myself upset, I need to look at myself. And she quoted it a different way. But it's always a good thing. If you're starting to suddenly, everything's burning up around you, and you're the good person, everybody else is bad, well, take a moment and look at that mirror. Look at it carefully. It won't hurt you. It's okay sometimes to take a beating, and sometimes an unfair beating from others.
I'm okay with that, as long as I can humbly respond to them and help them and help myself.
It's the first bell.
First bell, yes.
I was also thinking, as you have somebody that's coming at you, they may have a lot of unjust things, but yeah, usually there's something true in there.
Yes.
They wouldn't have come yes to you if there wasn't something for you to think about.
Yeah.
Usually.
I can remember I was at a congregation one time, and they had a lot of trouble, and somehow they just threw me in with some other people they were angry with. And I got one guy, and he just blew me away out of church. Man, I sat in the back pew, just scorching, you know. And the thing was, he didn't know me. And I was feeling good. I said, you know what? He doesn't know me yet. I do have weaknesses, and one day he'll learn to talk about it. But I went ahead and handled that and tried to work with this brother, and I ended up, in time, had a good relationship with him. But it is interesting how sometimes we're too quick to respond. I want to get starting lesson four next week. We'll consider this finished. I might make a summary of this, and we'll get in lesson four. Lesson four is our own, the chair, if you'd like to have one. Next week, we're going to talk about put God in the center of your life. We're going to talk about selfishness and how selfishness can affect us with self-pity and false expectations. Hope to see you next week. Thank you.